Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
I ran into some visitors this morning from the Nashville area. They haven't had electricity this whole time. And they came here to worship with us. So we are blessed. And there are a lot of things. Can we bring the volume down just a bit? Because I'm going to talk a little bit louder. And I don't want to cause a squeal in here. All right, we're in Luke 15. For our class. And if you are looking at the schedule, the old manuscript says lesson 8, but we slid one in between because of some sickness or whatever along the way. I couldn't make it one Sunday, so Bill Eads took in and did one of the lessons that's going to go toward the end. He did it that day. So we're Luke 15 on today's lesson, and the lesson's titled, the way Bill has laid things out, is Can I Get Lost Along the Way? The overall umbrella, the title is Discipleship. And the question would be for the disciples, can I get lost along the way? And we'll see what Luke 15 says about that, and the answer would be yes, as we understand that. But we'll get into some things here. Now, discussion is going to hit three different parables. And it's going to discuss a little bit the various ways that a disciple or a Christian can get lost. It deals a very focal point on helping those who may have fallen away to get back, to restore them. And the three parables that come up deal with this process, a lost sheep, a lost coin, and then a lost son. I want to read verses 1 and 2 and then talk a tiny bit about this because there's a variety of groups of people that are present as we're looking at discipleship along the way. Sometimes it was just studying with what Jesus and the apostles were doing. This time there's a larger crowd, and we'll notice this right at the beginning of verses 1 and 2. Then all the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to hear him, that is Jesus. And the Pharisees and the scribes complained, saying, This man receives sinners and eats with them. So there's a variety of different people that are present. There's a group of people you can just classify it as sinners. And my guess is, if you're talking a little bit to them, they'd say they're just happy to be there, to have the chance to hear Jesus, to have their spiritual cup actually filled. They aren't accepted very many places, and the places that where they are accepted aren't the places that probably a Christian would normally go. But these people are looking to follow Jesus to some way or another, and they're just happy to be there. I'd say, in a sense, they're looking to follow him. The other group of people there, mentioned in verse 2, are the Pharisees and the scribes, the religious leaders. They're not happy to be there, but they're coming for a different reason. They're not coming to be disciples, but they're present nonetheless in this occasion that Jesus is going to address these three parables. So include them in as part of the hearers. And they have, as anybody would, sitting at the feet of Jesus, an opportunity to learn something. Although they're probably there more to judge him, to do as best they can to defeat him, and to be exactly the opposite of what Jesus' purpose was. They wanted to draw people after them and not Jesus. And then I would think in this whole process that you've got a general group of disciples. Included in that would be the apostles, but not just them. I think there's a larger following of people that were honestly trying to follow Jesus. They just weren't as close as the apostles were. They weren't out on every occasion. But there's a crowd there. So as you're looking at what is happening in this setting, there's a large gamut of different people. And let's put a couple more people in this category. Of course, anytime you have a crowd like this, anytime really any Christians gathered for the purpose of doing something beneficial for the Lord, Satan's there too. We mentioned that, matter of fact, I guess in a sermon or something some weeks or months back. But so we got the sinners, we got the religious leaders, we got the apostles and a contingency of others that they're honestly seeking. We have Satan, and we also have Jesus that's present there too. And his goal is to help these people to understand God's will, understand the principles of discipleship. And as I was thinking back and looking over this lesson for the last few weeks, I thought you might as well include one other group in there. That's us. Jesus realizing, I think, what would be written eventually in each one of the Gospels and the rest of the New Testament, for that matter, knew that someday in time, 2,000 years plus later, there'd be another group of people that would be listening to these words and following along. And he's addressing us, I think, in this whole process. So that's what's happening here. And can I get lost along the way? Well, think about it. At age 12, Jesus, when he went into Jerusalem, was left behind. His parents lost track of him. Can we get lost along the way following Jesus? Yeah. Spiritually speaking, in a variety of ways. And these parables will address that. You think about the apostles that are there in that setting. Every one of them, when Jesus was taken in Gethsemane, left him and scattered. They got lost along the way. Peter denied him. He got confused on things afterwards. Totally not confused, just off track when he denied the Lord. But then after that, wasn't sure about his apostleship. Can I get lost along the way? Well, those that knew Jesus from childhood up did. Those that were close to him did. And so how do I fit in? And I think about it, and I was pondering this the other day, going back over the whole thing. Just looking for one more thing, maybe, that I missed. And I got thinking about, we're reading about people 2,000 years ago in a culture that we can somewhat understand because of what we read in books, in a land that most of you probably never traveled to, some of you been. Not only are the buildings different, but the culture's different, the people are different, the setting's different. And for those of you who have traveled, when you go someplace you've never been before, but you've read about it, and you get there and you have this feeling of, wow, I didn't imagine it being like this. This is incredible. Climbing up Mount Sinai or walking through Israel or other places and places you've been. And the books just don't capture it as much as being there. And so I got to wondering, how much are we really going to be able to capture? And I think it was Friday, I was looking. I'm an early riser. It was dark and I was up, which is typical. I was sitting there in the den and I had one tiny light on. I just wanted the quiet of the morning. And I was looking over the text, reading it, and I looked up out the window, which is, I like this place I sit because I can see straight out the yard, and it was light was starting to come up. And I thought about a couple of my favorite passages, Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. And the sun was starting to come up, and I thought, this is God. He's causing this to happen just like he did 2,000 years ago. Day into day, every day, utters speech. Night into night, reveals wisdom or knowledge. And then it goes on, the psalm says that there's no place that the sun is not gone. Comes out like a bridegroom, like a strong man, ready to run his course with joy. And its rising comes from the end of the heavens and its circuit to the other end. And I'm thinking, God's been making this darkness into light every day, proclaiming his greatness. And here we've got it right here. So I don't think we're really missing anything when we stop and look at what God's exposing us to, if we'll listen and read and focus. So there's a great advantage to this, and the daylight's still appearing. Now, Luke 15. So the people are around, tax collectors, the sinners, scribes and the Pharisees, I guess they're having a rough time trying to figure out how they can maneuver around not touching any of the sinners. You know how that goes? Reading scriptures. And so he spoke to them this parable. Three, actually. He says to them, what man of you, having 100 sheep, if he loses one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors. I have neighbors like that. I'm one of those. Go out and just tell everybody everything. He calls together all these people, and he says to them, rejoice with me, for I've found my sheep, which was lost. You get the feeling the parable is implying. He's been out telling everybody this. Now he's found him, and they're come get excited with me about this. And I say to you that likewise there will be more joy in heaven, more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over the 99 just persons who need no repentance. So I'm thinking about this. Some of you may have money in the stock market. There's money in different locations, I'm guessing. And some days some goes up, some goes down, and you're averaging out and you're thinking how things are in life, your house and this and that, you know, and we can't do everything 100% of the time. These people here, when you're talking about sheep, they understand. They do sheep talk. I don't. I've been a few places where there are sheep, and they're not these cute little lambs, but they are sheep. But these people understand sheep. And so when Jesus starts talking about lost sheep, they're listening. You lost one? Yeah, I've lost one before. What do? You go out after it. And so as we're looking at the parable, it's kind of interesting that the shepherd, who goes after the sheep, this lost sheep? Let's ask the question. I've already kind of slanted toward that, didn't I? I said the shepherd goes after him. Now, Jesus will talk about sheep and caring for sheep, and he'll use the term hireling, so that existed in that day and time. But he doesn't stay back since he's got a large flock and send somebody out. Notice that. He goes after it himself. There's a serious matter about this. I'm doing this myself. I don't trust anybody. AI can trust him, but I'm still going to go myself. I want it done right, and I want to be there to have it done right. The shepherd goes. Where does he leave the 99? What's the text say? He leaves them in the wilderness. And I looked at there, I thought, He's left those out there by themselves. Sheep probably can flock together and handle themselves pretty good. Church does a pretty good job of it. But one got lost. Jesus is expecting everybody to identify with what's going on. Now, what's strange here, and I think a little different, if these people that lose the sheep and they go out and get it, when they bring the sheep back, by the way, again, I don't think it's one of these little baby lambs that you kind of, you know, when I'm out with the grandkids, and thankful that Teo doesn't feel this way. You know how big Teo is. He weighs almost as much as I do. But the two little ones that are 5 years old and 3 years old, when I'm going along, as soon as I pop one of them on my back and I'm backpacking, the other one says, I want to ride. And you can only carry so many, but I can carry either one of those two pretty good ways. I enjoy it. It's a thrill. It's exciting. Granddad gets to do something neat with the kids. The shepherd picks up this huge sheep that could walk on his own, and he throws it up on his shoulders. I think that had to shock the people as they're listening to that. Think about it. He doesn't grab it by a collar or whatever, attach something around him so he gets lost. It could have, but he doesn't. When I get the grandkids on my back, they're excited. We get to do something with Poppy. And I think there's a connection being mentioned here that this shepherd is so happy to have found him. He's not just dragging it back because it's wandered off, but he's happy he's found it. He wants the sheep to know it. And the sheep, these are characters. They have different personalities. I've at least read about it, not that I've had any. They know their master, and when the master pays attention to them, if you've ever watched anything about shepherding, you see them all just kind of scattering around. They hang right there with them. He was treating the sheep nice, and the sheep was appreciating it. Special treatment given. What does he call the sheep, Jesus, when it's out away from the flock? What one word is used? Lost. And the reference is going to be, of course, an application spiritually. It was a sheep, part of the flock. It's still a sheep, but now it is L-O-S-T, lost. Can I get lost along the way? Yeah. How did this sheep get lost? How does a three-year-old get lost? Not paying attention. It's just, you know how they are? Just say amen when the services are over with, and those little kids just scatter everywhere. There's four or five of them running around here. They're not paying attention to what you're doing. And you could turn the lights off, and they stayed there the whole time playing, running back and forth. I watched them up to the last hour. That's a sheep. Sometimes we can just get lost, not paying attention. Satan will do what he can. He'll take advantage. I think there's a reference toward that. What happens when the shepherd gets back home with the sheep? Tells his friends, his neighbors, gets all excited, throws a party. There's rejoicings is the word that's used. Now, kind of representing that is thinking about the children. When one of the children gets lost, or when Jesus got lost, why did you do this to me? They have a discussion with him. But there's nothing mentioned about, we're going to have a sheep meeting here. We're going to talk about how to get lost, and we're going to make sure everybody's on track. Nothing mentioned about that. He goes back, and the first thing he does is throw this party. And he tells the neighbors to come and rejoice with him. And then the parallel, very quickly, Jesus says, there is more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner. And you've seen this before. Okay. So application, souls can get lost. We can get lost. And there's, I think, some special emphasis here about making sure we get involved in getting the sheep back. Yeah, Bill. Okay.
And so we would want to mature have to seek them out. They don't know how to find them.
Good point. For those that may not hear that, maybe watching this online or wherever, the sheep aren't smart enough to get back. And so they have to have help in finding it when they're lost. But the condition is that they're still lost. But what I want to mention here, and we'll come down to this in the next two parables too, is there's rejoicing that goes on. And I want to take a moment to really highlight the value of that. Let's go to the next parable. It's only three verses long, but totally different character involved, or item that's lost. Or what woman, sorry ladies, seems to be picking on the women here. Or what woman having 10 silver coins, that's a drachma in Greek, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it. And when she's found it, she calls her friends and her neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the piece that I lost. And likewise, I say to you, there'll be joy in the presence of angels." Now, extra part added in here, not just in heaven, but with the angels of God over one sinner who repents. How did the coin get lost? She lost it. It doesn't really say. Yeah, maybe she was counting the coins one night and one of them fell off wherever they were being counted and slid up underneath something. Now, as in the parable that we just read and this one here, how long did they hunt for this item? First one, the sheep. Second one, the coin. What time period is mentioned here? Until they find it. They're not going to stop until they find it. Now, those of you that have ever lost kids in a mall, our little one, not Bethany, but her younger sister, used to play games. And you have these large arrangements of clothes in a circle thing. And if you're small enough, you can get up in the middle and hide right between her. Nobody can see you. You're standing up on the rail and you can't even see their feet sticking out. And Tara would go there. Sorry, Tara, if you're watching this. And she'd hide in there. And we'd be calling her name. And we weren't resting until we found her. That woman was not going to rest. That shepherd was not going to rest. There's a passion. It's not exactly mentioned, but obvious. I am not stopping until I find this. And it's like drudgery and horribleness all the way to the point, and then when you find them, it's full of excitement. So much so that, again, there's rejoicing. We'll come back to that again. So there's some similarities between one and the other. Now let's get down to the last one, which is much longer. The lost son. Prodigal son, sometimes called. Because of the phrase that he ends up living here. The life that he lives. And then he said, a certain man had two sons. Sons. Now he's really getting personal. We've talked about sheep. They've all had sheeps. Probably everybody's lost a coin or a something around the house. And the older you get, the easier it is to lose things. Isn't that? Could have swore I put it here and you keep going looking. At this point, if it's not worth dying for, I quit looking after a while. It'll show up. It's just, I live better that way. But this woman needed that coin. That man wanted that sheep. This man has sons. This is personal. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. And so he divided to them his livelihood. Describe that son. Greedy. What else? Yeah. He wants his inheritance now. He doesn't care much for his dad. And what kind of an attitude would you say he has then? Disrespectful? Self-centered? Arrogant? Proud? Doesn't care about his family or his dad? It's me, myself, and nobody else. We don't know anybody like that in this culture, do we? Goodness. Just watch the news. And then later on, they declare, honest, he was such a nice person. I can't, pull out the best picture you can and show me about that person, but you know what they've been up to. Our whole society is full of people like this. And he asked for his inheritance ahead of time. Like, Dad, forget it, I'm checking out. Dad doesn't do this normally. Have you ever known anybody that's ever done that? Inside or outside the church, that's walked up to the parents and says, I want my inheritance now. And yet the parable's laid out like that. And so if you're hearing this and thinking about it, you've got to think, as any parent, but especially a Jewish parent, back to 2,000 years ago, how disgusting. Who raised that child? But why would you even give him that, even if he asked for it? And Dad does. Gives him his possessions. Verse 13, and not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and he journeyed to a far country, as if to say, safety and morality, godly living is right here in this area. Now I'm going all the way over here where none of that takes place. I've got my sights set on where I'm headed. And this is where I want to live. And I get to do what I want to do. I had a good friend. Said when he was being raised, his parents were telling him what to do. And he says, I just went off. He says, I joined the Marines. He says, I showed them. I don't have to be told what to do. Did he tell them? They don't have anybody in the Marines that tell you what to do, do they? No. Or Army or wherever. Anyway, so he leaves and he goes. Verse 14. But when he had spent all, now if he's a rich dad, even though he's got his friends, he's got a good portion. How long did he go? I don't know. But when he spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land. And he began to be in want. Verse 15, then he went and he joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him to feed, in the fields rather, to feed the swine. Let's just really slap the Jewish people in the face. Not only do they not eat swine, they don't come near them. So this is what he's doing. He's taking care of pigs. The pigs have got a better life than he's in charge of taking care of the pigs. Worse than that was, and he would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, but no one gave him anything. I've seen people read that and say, he was eating what the pigs ate. No, he didn't get that. Have any of y'all, in here, I'm sure some of you, have seen pigs get fed, slop thrown to the pigs? Anybody ever seen it? Yes? I have one time I remember as a boy. Grandparents raised me. So I was with Grandpa, and we were going up to a farm area. And it came time, and they were slopping the pigs. He said, come here, I want you to see this. And so I'm watching, I think it was the wife, I don't remember who it was, came out with this big bucket of stuff. It stunk. It was the mix of everything that nobody else wanted, and it had been sitting there in the kitchen for however long. And the pigs saw her coming. They got all excited and ran up to the fence with all that stuff. And she just dumped that stuff in there. I'm thinking, ooh, what? Get back. Don't let it splash on you. Who would ever reach down with a spoon and want to scoop that up? This guy was in a deplorable situation. And the Jewish people are reading this thinking, oh, goodness. They know what this is like. So he tells the condition and then the change of mind. Verse 17. And when he came to himself, how long had it been before he came to himself? Doesn't say, does it? I'm not sure. I can see it on his face here. Who knows? He didn't have any friends anymore. He had friends when he had money, but he didn't have friends then. And he was hired and paid somewhat, but evidently not much because he didn't have enough to even eat what the pigs were getting. So it's a pretty bad life. But however long it finally dawned on him, you know, I really messed up. So he came to himself and he said, how many of my father's hired servants have bread enough and to spare? And I perish with hunger. I will arise and I'll go to my house. They have these jokes going around. How many preachers does it take to change a light bulb? Or how many engineers? I don't know the engineer one, but y'all can fill in the blank. How many engineers does it take to change a light bulb? What's the answers that you've heard? Anybody? I've heard one that says, how many counselors does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is one, but the light bulb has to want to change. Okay? Notice, in the two parables preceding this, the shepherd goes out immediately and starts looking. The woman starts sweeping the entire house, both of them, until they find it. Nobody's coming to his rescue. Because the dad says, he's not changing until he wants to. You got to think about it sometimes, because Don't think bad about the dad. He knew what he had at his home and the type of boy he was. And when he asked for inheritance, it didn't surprise him. And when he left and went somewhere else, that didn't surprise him. And he's going to have to let him figure it out. Why did this guy lose himself? We'll read into it that he was lost and then found. We want to make sure we get some time. First one, because sheep just don't know any better. The coin, because it's just happenstance. Why did this guy get lost? How can a disciple get lost? He chose to. Both of you said the same thing. He chose to do it. What made him choose that? A lot of different things. There's a lot of answers for that. What causes people to choose a life that they have today? And there's a whole gamut of things. Because the world's pretty tantalizing. That's one. The guy saw that. He's in the parable. And yeah, hey. And we have in our world all kinds of people. But you know what? After, and I'm sure it's no surprise to you that have been in the church in leadership for a while, to hear me say that I have seen all kinds of religious leaders get off track for a variety of different reasons. I know one that just, his wife caught him having adultery with a woman. And she was ready to take him back until she found out that was not the only one. Nor was it just two. Nor was it just three. He got around to the whole church, and I don't know how he did that, but he wasn't that good looking. But somehow, the world. I know a preacher in Nashville some years ago, and the cars in the parking lot were getting broken into. And they finally checked the camera. It was the preacher. He's breaking into the cars and stealing stuff out of the congregation stuff. Nicaragua. We had to fire one preacher because he was running around with a woman. One of the local missionaries, local men. Second one wasn't any better. He stayed with his wife, but he was getting into everything else that belonged to the church. And it's not confined to just preachers, but that's who I'll pick on, okay? I feel safer since I guess I could still call myself that somewhat retired, but it happens in leadership. The world just can really influence. Or, and I've known some people, and you probably have too, that have left the church because of church members that have mistreated them, or they felt like they were, or overlooked, or pride, or any number of things that Satan can use on us. And so, yeah, there's an emphasis in all three parables about seeking the lost, but the headline of what we're talking about here is any one of us can fall into that trap. Just wander off. Just sheep, just get lost and not pay attention. Or pay attention to all the many different wonderful things that are in the world, but really aren't wonderful for us. Okay, verse 18. I will arise and I'll go to my father and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. And I'm no longer worthy. I like his attitude. He's finally got it together. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And I'm guessing there was a plea in here, not just a demand, but make me like one of your hired servants. And so he decided he was going to do it and that he didn't back off. And he arose and he came to his father. Where was Dad? Out working in the field? He was watching, sitting there, waiting, hoping today'd be the day. And he'd been doing that ever since the kid left. 5 minutes. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion on him, and ran and fell on his neck. He didn't stand up there stomping his foot on the porch. Okay, get down this path. All right, come up the sidewalk. Now come up every one of those steps. He recognized the son, even though he couldn't really identify it for sure, but he could tell by the way he walks. You know how that is. You can just, you recognize some people, that, you know, just the way they are. And he ran all the way. Father says to the servant, bring out the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet, and bring the fatted calf here and kill it, and let us eat and be merry, for my son was dead and is alive again. Spiritual condition. He was lost, and now he's found. And they began to make merry. And you know the part about the older son? Didn't like it. Couldn't take it. He was mistreated somehow. He wasn't. Dad tried to explain all that. Verse 32, it was right that we should make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost, and now he's found. There was no halfway in between. Discussion was plain. Jesus says there's two roads, two different things you can build on, just two. But he's alive. Because the dad said, you're back. And that's all it took. So for us, a recognition, sometimes we can even be in the pews or in the chairs or seats, and we're still not quite connected like we ought to be. Just be careful. Any one of us, preachers, elders, women, men, old, young, Satan's after us. Now, in the last couple minutes, there was rejoicing in all three parables. I got to thinking about that. Excuse me. We have people who come forward on occasion and will say a prayer, and a few of the friends will come up around and encourage him and pat him on the back. And I don't know exactly how to go about this, but I wonder if we don't need more rejoicing somehow. And I don't mean anything unscriptural, but just some way that the church sees that person was lost and now he's found and we're excited about him being back. And the person takes note of it. And when he leaves here, he's not just solemnly walking away. Well, they had a prayer for me. It's like, he is excited because they're excited. And I think maybe we could do a little better job at that. About being excited. Because the angels are. And I got to thinking, I wonder what the angels do when they're excited. I just can't think. They've got their little heads bowed. And say a little prayer. I think there was excitement going on. Now, if you watch a football game that's coming up shortly, every time there's a touchdown, there is excitement. There's rejoicing over a football game. Just thinking. Maybe we just voluntarily can do a better job. Being excited for our brethren.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.